Welcome to Rock and Roll Garage. All right, all right. How we doing out there? Appreciate you joining me here on Rock and Roll Garage. 790 WPIC. I'm your host, Eric Bombeck. I guess I have to say that. The other show I do here, it's called The Bombeck Show. I don't really have to introduce myself, but I guess I should do that. It's only proper. Hey, listen, I have a great show lined up for you. Anybody remember The Office? The one year they did their season 7 open was a song that was a big hit in the 1960s called Nobody But Me. I'm going to play a little bit for you right now. Turn that down a little bit. So this was the song by the Human Beings. Got the world record for the most repeated word. So it was a great song, great hit. And I never realized that the whole band was from Youngstown and tour. Recently, a friend told me, about a decade ago, I guess. That's more recently. When you get older, 10 years is a short time period. But with me now is Ting Markulan. He's the original founding member of the band. And those guys were from Youngstown, of course. And he's with me now. Hey, Ting, how are you, man?
Just glad to be here.
Yeah, man. So you're in Florida these days. You lived in Youngstown for a long time. Do you miss it up here? It's just, I love it here. It's wonderful. I can't imagine moving away.
I do. That's my favorite town in the world. And every time that I'm going someplace, people say, are you going on vacation? I say, yeah. They go, where are you going? I say, Youngstown, Ohio.
Right. And
they're like, not exactly, a vacation mecca, but I said, well, a lot of my history is in Youngstown.
Sure.
I love the place. I love the people. I mean, and, you know, and back in the day, Youngstown was just absolutely insane. It was just crazy. So much stuff going on.
Sure. Well, you could just tell them, hey, I'm going to Farmer Jim's. You know, I'm going up to that big resort where everybody goes, the Farmer Jim's or Smelco's. Right, I know. You and I talked about that place. So let's just start from the beginning, Ting. What kind of music did you listen to when you were growing up in Youngstown?
Oh, the usual. I mean, I listened to Elvis quite a bit. I had all his records, and I had everybody's records. I guess I listened to Little Richard. All the black groups, everything. I fell in love with music. Around 10 years old.
So you what was the music scene like for you when you were a kid then? I mean, I know you weren't going to the clubs when you were a kid, but what was there, when you're in high school, was there a music scene there in Youngstown that you could go check out?
Well, I started playing when I was 13.
Wow.
And yes, I was in a lot of clubs.
Well, maybe you were in the clubs, I guess. Wow.
Well, I mean, playing, in bands, in bars. I mean, I was 14 years old, and, Youngstown, I'm saying back then, was wide open, okay? I mean, any of us could. We could just walk into a bar or a club or sit down and have a beer. Nobody questioned you.
That's funny.
Nothing. It was just wild. I miss it.
What years would we be talking about when you first started playing in clubs there, and what were the clubs that you were playing at?
Most of them are shut down now.
Sure.
But they were like VFWs and those vets clubs and everything. They would have. Everybody was having bands back then because everything was just going so good. In fact, I can tell you a crazy story. There used to be a bar right at the edge of the Market Street Bridge, before you would go down into Youngstown.
Mm-hmm.
And, we were playing there. We were like 14 years old, and the lead guitar player kept, he played real loud, and it's like, the guy kept coming up to me and saying, hey, tell him to turn down. And I kept telling him, and he said, no. He said, I play the way I want to play, And this guy with a big cowboy hat all come up, and he said, "Are you going to turn that thing down?" And my buddy said, "No." So the guy pulled out a revolver and shot his amp.
Wow.
I was like, you know,
Wild
how
West.
Low do you want me to play, sir? I will turn my amp down as
wow.
far as you want.
When, what era would this have been? What are we talking about? The early 60s here? When you were, when,
well,
as a kid?
Late 50s, early 60s, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, we were, you know, all of us were like crazy about music and just trying whatever we could do to get into bands.
Sure.
You know, and of course, they were all great bands because I was in them.
Right,
you
right.
know what I mean.
Yeah. So your first band before you guys were the Human Beings was the Premiers. How did you guys first get together there and talk about the band, your bandmates?
Well, actually, I'll go back another step.
Okay.
I was in a band called the Epics. And I don't know if, I mean, as far as the history of, you know, Youngstown Rock goes, Dick Stroney, who ended up being the keyboard player in the Executioners, was in the band with me. And the one guitar player we had decided he was going to join the service because he was having some trouble at home with his parents or something. But anyhow, our drummer got sick one night, and we needed a drummer to sit in. Well, somebody knew a kid named Gary Coates who was playing with the Premiers, and he said he'd sit in with us. So he watched me all night, and I'm starting to think, is he kind of peculiar or what's going on?
Right.
You know, so anyhow, we got paid that night and said, "See ya." And he said, "Thanks for, giving me the gig and everything." So a couple of nights later, he calls me and he says, "Hey, we're losing our one guitar player. So we want to know if you want to try out for the Premiers." And I almost passed out because that was my favorite band in the whole area.
Huh.
And so I said, "Sure." I showed up and played a few songs, and they said, "If you want to be in, you're in." I said, "Oh, I definitely want to be in." And that was basically how we all got together, in the Premiers. And then Gary had to leave the drummer for the service, and we got Mike to replace him.
I know that, help me understand, because I read something about this, and I have had an opportunity to interview Del Sinchek, who was in the Youngstown band there, Del Saint and the Devils, in the late 50s and early 60s, and Del played cowbell on Ram-a-Lam-a Ding Dong, but I think some of the guys that you play with in the Premiers were the backup group for that song as well. Is that right?
I don't know. No, nobody ever said... what song are you talking about?
Remember Ram-a-Lam-a Ding Dong?
Ram-a-Lam-a Ding Dong?
Yeah, those guys were from Youngstown. I can't
think. Yeah, the Edsels.
The Edsels. Del Sinchek played cowbell in those. And from what I've understood, at least from what I've understood in the past, is that a few guys in the Premiers also played on that song when they recorded it in Cleveland.
Well, maybe the Premiers did before.
Would have been before you, probably, yeah.
Yeah, but I have no recollection of that.
Okay.
I mean, that would have been a blast. That would have been something I wouldn't have forgotten.
Right, so, sure. Yeah, I think that would have been late 50s, Ting, that would have happened. So it would have been, after you were there, it sounds like. But
Well, I didn't get into the Premiers until 64.
Okay. So you guys were playing, what clubs were you playing? Do you remember what you were playing in Sharon and Youngstown when you got to be the Premiers in the mid-60s? Can you name some of the places for me?
Oh, geez.
Let me ask you this. Did you play the Bug Out in over here in a transfer?
Yes.
Okay.
We did that. What was crazy was when we started playing, we were playing at the old barn. Every Friday night, that was our big thing, That was actually the only job we had to start out, you know, and we had some sporadic jobs, you know, every once in a while, maybe we'd get a Saturday night someplace, and usually it would be the roller rinks, like Champion, and as you remember, East Palestine. Anyhow, I used to get mad because you'd play there. They weren't really doing, they were just starting to do dances, so they didn't have a stage or anything set up. And I used to get mad because, you know, I'm standing on the floor. I'm only, you know, I'm like, you know, 2 inches away from being a midget or something. But, yeah, I didn't, you know, so what we did was we played, we got folding chairs and we stood on them and played.
You're saying what, because of the wall around the rink, you guys were being blocked? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that we had to set up on the floor.
Oh, on the actual floor.
No,
the
stage. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
And there was no stage, so when people would come and stand in front of us, I would be looking at people's chests.
Right. That's right.
So, you know, I asked the guys, I said, you think it'd be, you know, crazy if we stood on some chairs so we could be up higher than the people?
Oh,
and then, you know, they said, let's do it, because Mel was crazy. He would dance on his amp, so he's playing and having this chair dancing all around, you know, and people thought we were crazy. It was a crazy time. I mean, we dressed in all black beetle boots, black jeans, black T-shirts, and black berets.
Mm.
And we thought we were all that.
that's good stuff. So when did you switch over from the premieres to the human beings? Talk about that switch.
Okay. What happened was we were playing. Like I say, there were crazy things that happened. And the Del Reyes, which was really a good band, they were playing at the Grist Mill in Austin Town, and they couldn't make it one night. They asked us if we could fill in, and we were looking for jobs. So, of course, we said yes. Well, we played there that night, and the response was so overwhelming that the manager of the bar asked us if we wanted to be the house band. And I said, well, what about the Del Reyes? They said, that's the way the business goes.
Right.
We, you know, we want you guys, if you guys want a beer. So, yeah, we said, okay. Well, that was growing and growing. The Grist Mill was getting really popular. So the manager said he was going to open a bar downstairs. They had a banquet room down there, you know, for weddings and things. Well, he converted it into a club called the Gazebo Club. Anyhow, he told us we could open the club and be the house band and everything. He wanted us in, but he said, it's something you have to do. And we were like, well, what do we have to do? You know, you tell us. He said, you have to change the name. Premieres is just, that's, he said, I think Premieres when I think of like a 56 Lincoln riding around.
Right.
So we said, all right. He says, you got to change the way you dress and everything. You know, you got to start going for the long hair look and, you know, the British thing. So we said, okay, well, first thing is we'll try to come up with a name. So he gave us a couple weeks, because then he needed so much time to advertise before it opened, you know, to
come. Sure, open. Yeah.
So we threw around, you know, every name you can think of, and could come up with nothing, you know, no animals, no cars, and we're all going crazy, and we're just going crazy, and someone said, hey, you know, what are we going to do? We're just human beings, and we were like, that's it. We'll use that. We'll be the human beings. So we went back and told the manager at the Grist Mill, we got a name, the human beings. He said, I love it. He said, I'll start advertising for you guys.
Well, that's a good story. It really is. I know then later your record label screwed it up and left the G off, and you were the human beings. And when your song came out, well, who was, you guys were a cover band, and the original Nobody But Me was the Isley Brothers. Who arranged?
Correct.
Who arranged this, your hit version of the song?
Well, we did through, you know, kind of through the years, because that song was a popular club song, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of bands played it in Youngstown, but they did it like the Isley Brothers, and mm-hmm. We were experimenting, you know, the psychedelic stuff was coming in. So we just started changing the song the way we felt we liked it. And when we played it at the studio, because it wasn't supposed to be the song we were supposed to do, our producer loved the song. He said, you know, we just had to put it into a recording format mm-hmm. and shorten it about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But that's what happened with that.
Where was the song recorded at, Ting?
Excuse me.
Yep.
It was at the Cleveland Recording Studio.
Okay. Okay. I think, is that the same place that Left End recorded as well at, in Cleveland?
I think a lot of bands started going there.
Yeah.
And not because we did, but I mean, it was a good place to go. It was a good studio. The engineer was a great guy. So, I mean, yeah, we started running into, you know, bands. I don't know if you remember, like, the Lemon Pipers.
Yes, I do.
They, you know, we run into them up there, and the Ohio Express.
Mm-hmm.
The Ohio Explosion, all these bands, they were all going to Cleveland Recording to record it. And we never went away from there. The Capitol liked the quality that we were sending to them, you know, from there.
Yeah. So when the song we recorded it, then did the guys at WHOT, it's our sister station here at Cumulus, here in Youngstown, did those guys help you out? Were they one of the first ones to play the Nobody But Me?
Yes, they were really good to us. And like I'm saying, standing right at the top of that was Dick Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Thompson was just a great guy, you know, and a good friend. You know, he just recently passed.
Yep. Yes, here about 2 years ago now. Dick worked until he was in his pushing 80 years old here, into his 70s anyways. He still was in Youngstown working at least part-time. Of course, a legend of radio. What do you remember about Boots Bell?
Oh, he was loud.
Boots.
That booming voice, my goodness.
Yeah.
There are always some good stories about everybody, you know, we met back then, and bands, you know, DJs and everything. Boots Bell had a thing where he couldn't stand it. If you said checking, testing into the microphone.
Right.
He'd want you to just tap it with your finger. Now, you can't really tone, you know what I mean? Like, I can understand with his voice, he didn't need anything. When he talked, it was just there, you know. Now, we needed help for singing, you know, so we had to adjust things. But anyhow, he come over to me one day. We're getting set up at Idora Park. And he goes, look, all you have to do is tap on the microphone. Like this, you know, he's going tap, tap, tap.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, all right. He says, do you understand? I said, yeah, Boots, okay. So he turned around and walked away from, got about 5 feet from me, and I went, testing.
Testing. A rebel, a rock and roll rebel till the end. That's
funny. Well, he froze up, like you could tell, you know, from behind.
Yeah.
He froze up, and then he had a, I don't know why, but, you know, we were friends and everything, but he always called me a stupid Lithuanian, and to this day, I don't even know what that is.
Me either.
<That's> Hey, you stupid Lithuanian. Let me do that.
Lithuanian, is that what he was saying?
Yeah, Lithuanian.
Lithuanian, yeah. The Boots had his own vernacular. He was always just making up words and funny stuff. Good stuff. I'm here, by the way, if you just happen to be tuning in, with Ting Markulin, who is one of the founding members of the Human Beings. Their hit song in 1968, "Nobody But Me," made it to the national charts here. So eventually, the song makes it big. What was the biggest thing that broke the song? How did it get to be? Did it break somewhere in a city somewhere? How did it get to be a national hit?
Was regional. Now, I mean, we weren't happy about that because it didn't show our true sales, you know, because it would like get hot here, then it would stall, you know, and then it'd get hot someplace else. So what we would do is we would travel to the area, you know, because they're all of a sudden they're calling. They want us to do, dances and stuff, stop in, do a guest stint, you know, just a couple songs, whatever. And but the way it strung out, it lasted for so long, you know, because I mean that was our hit. And we released it in 67, in the summer of 67. Actually, it came out in September of 67. Mm-hmm. And we were still riding that thing when we were in Japan in 1969.
Wow. I know that you guys were big hits.
Longevity.
You were big stars there in Japan.
Well, do you want to go that far right now?
Well, I tell you what, let's do this. Well, let's hold off for just a second here. We'll tease it. And I know that you're struggling a little bit there, so I don't want to keep you on the phone all night, but we'll take a short break and we'll come back and you can tell the people about your time with the Beach Boys and the tour in Japan. More with Ting Markulin here on Rock and Roll Garage. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back right after this short time out. Welcome back to the Rock and Roll Garage. I always want to say the Bombeck Show. Doing a couple of shows here. I have a third show I do on Sundays as well called The Road. I'm here with Ting Markulin. Don't have any bumper music apparently here, but I'm with Ting, and we were talking about the tour in Japan. I guess that you guys did a tour with the Beach Boys in Japan. Is that right?
No, we actually toured across the United States with the Beach Boys. And, you know, ended up in our last date was in San Diego, and then we went up to L.A. Well, the thing about the Beach Boys tour was that we got to know them, and Gary Puckett and the Union Gap were also, you know, on the bill. We went on first, Gary Puckett went on second, and the Beach Boys finished up tonight. And I gained a whole new respect for them when I saw them in concert, because they were on the money, you know, I mean, their voices and everything.
Right.
And just beautiful, beautiful harmonies. All their songs, you know, sounded like you're in a recording studio.
Wow.
It was very nice. But what happened is in Chicago, Dennis went for a walk and got lost.
Dennis Wilson.
So we're all looking for him.
Right, Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys. Right, go ahead.
Well, he did stuff like that. He just wandered off, you know. So we found him downtown Chicago. We're driving through downtown Chicago in an RV looking for him. And, you know, we spotted him because he always had on, you had a long blonde hair, no shirt, a white suit jacket, white suit pants, and no shoes. So was easy to find.
What, I'm guessing there were drugs involved here. Ting, help me understand what was going on. Was you just running away from home? What was you doing?
No, we were there for a concert. You know, I mean, that was one of the stops.
Yeah. But why? And, why was he wayward that you had to go get him?
He was really into drugs at the time.
Okay, that's what I was assuming, that he was stoned.
Yeah, so, I mean, he'd just kind of drift off sometimes. So we found him, took him back to the concert hall, and, you know, he really thanked us. And he was, you know, he came close to not being there for the show to start.
Right. Well, what was the drug of choice? I mean, everybody was smoking pot, but what were the bands doing that would make you want to wander off? Was it pills or what?
I don't know everything he did. I know he was smoking some weed.
Right.
You know, because I gave it to him.
Okay.
So me and the drummer, Mike Tapman, you know, for our band.
Yep.
Told him we had some Acapulco gold, and all of them came into the RV.
All the Beach Boys, you mean?
All the Beach Boys, yep. Came okay. in the RV, and I had rolled this little needle joint, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was thin. It looked like a toothpick almost.
Right.
We all got trashed on it. All of us won.
That's funny. So you got the Beach Boys high. That's great stuff. I know that you were buddies with Dennis. You hung out with him at least for a while. And you had told me a previous story about meeting a certain crazy individual. I won't say the name and ruin the story, but you met a guy at a lodge there that frightened you a little bit.
Yeah. Dennis invited us to stay at his place after the tour was over, you know. And so we said, okay, there again, Mike and I were the only two in the RV, you know, we're traveling. So, you know, we pulled up there and we went in, and there was a big bowl of weed on the coffee table, another big bowl full of pills, just mixed in there. I don't know how you could tell what was what or what to take, but anyhow, these weird girls come out and were playing violin and singing, and I'm, you know, I mean, you can do what you want, but I'm not really liking seeing big long wads of hair hanging out from under armpits,
right,
on women.
Real hippies, huh?
So so I'm just, Mike and I are going, man, it's just kind of weird, you know. And so this other guy comes out and sits down on the couch and going, how you doing? He's, yeah, he's, how are you? And we started talking about stuff, and he kept saying how people were pigs and they should be killed. And I'm like, man, what's going on with this guy? So I asked Dennis, I said, who are these people? He said, I don't know. They just showed up one day, and they've been living here. So I said, you know, I forgot. We've got to go over to our producer's house and do some stuff. I said, and then we'll be back. Then I said, okay. So we left and we never went back. I never got to see Dennis again after that. It was really strange.
And then,
but then, like I say, when I see, not even a year later, the deaths. Sharon Tate and all that, and then they catch him, and there's his picture in the paper. I just about, you know, passed out. I got all that hair in the back of my neck standing up.
So it's Charles Manson sitting on the couch with Charles Manson. Geez, that's like a scene straight out of a movie there, isn't it? I'm here with Ting Markulin, who of the Human Beings. He's living in Florida. Originally, the band is from Youngstown, and you're listening to the Rock and Roll Garage. I'm Eric Bombeck. Lots of music lined up for you this evening, by the way. I'll be here till 6:30. Going to be doing a little expose of songs that you didn't know were remakes. Going to be doing that between 6 and 6:30. Just a couple minutes left here with Ting. I know that Joe Walsh auditioned with you guys as well. Ting, talk about that.
I really, it was a disaster.
Right.
I guess I should explain how it happened. We tried to get the James Gang signed on Capitol, and they let the James Gang do a studio album, you know. And then when we sent it in, it wasn't what they were looking for. So the James Gang were pretty dejected. Dick Billy, our lead singer, said he was going to quit us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this was after we got back from the Beach Boys tour, a couple weeks or so. So I said, Joe, I said, things aren't working out for you. We need a guitar player. You know, you want to give it a try? He said, yeah, why not? He said, where do you want to meet? I said, you know, my mom's got a place over on the west side of Youngstown. I said, we can jam in her garage. So he said, yeah, that would be great. Well, styles clashed. You know what I mean?
Sure.
He wasn't a fit. He was too good.
That's funny. Certainly one of the great guitar players of our day, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's as good a person as he is a guitar player, too, yeah. I'll tell you. But, you know, we just looked at each other and said, this ain't going to work, you know. So
this would have been before they came out with the James Gang. Their big hit was Turn Your Hit, Pretty Head, and Walk Away. This would have been before then, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because they did get signed.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was 68. They really took off in 69. Really, really big.
Yep.
Yeah, one of my favorite bands to this day.
The James Gang. Yeah, they were good. I remember my brother having the James Gang album around when I was a kid. Talk about your tour of Japan. Were there a lot of girls chasing you over there in Japan, or no? Not you personally, but the band?
Yeah, we had to have bodyguards, all kinds of security. I don't know how much time we have left.
You got about 5 minutes. Go ahead. You got time to tell the story.
Well, let me. All right. We got on the plane to go to Japan over here in Cleveland, and nobody was on the plane. So we thought, oh, man, this is going to be great. All the way to Japan, you know, we can run around, you know, whatever. And it landed in Chicago, and the plane filled up. Well, there was one seat left on the plane, and nobody would sit next to Dick Billy, our lead singer, because he kind of looked like a werewolf. But, so, you know, we take off, and we're out of Chicago. We have to go to Anchorage. That's going to be our point of departure from the States. And I forgot I had a couple of hits of speed in my pocket.
Oh, wow.
And I'm thinking, oh, you know, we don't want to be caught with this.
Right.
And Mike's like, well, throw it away. I'm like, Mike, I'm not throwing this away.
Right.
I said, you're taking, I got four. I said, you're taking two and I'm taking two.
Oh, man.
So we get back on the plane and we're flying, you know, up over the ocean. And this, you know, there was elderly couples, too, that were on the plane with us, you know, not young kids. And this little old lady was sitting between me and Mike, hugging her, like, you know, white knuckle grip on her purse, afraid to move. So I, you know, the speed kicked in, and I was like, excuse me, ma'am. I said, where's your husband? She said, oh, he's sitting over there. I said, excuse me, let me out. You know, and I had the window seat. I went over to him and I said, hey, I said, why don't you go sit with your wife? He's
right.
Like, are you kidding? I said, no. I said, you guys should sit together. I said, go ahead. In fact, I told the stewardess, I said, buy these people. I don't want to buy them a drink. And Mike kind of like looks up and he's like, oh, no. I said, yeah, in fact, get everybody on the plane a drink. So that's part of it. I mean, we got to meet all these people on the plane. You know, we turned it into a big social party.
That's awesome.
And we told them that nobody knew we were coming. It was a promotional tour. And what I'm leading up to is the plane comes down and lands.
Right.
It's taxiing up, you know, taxiing up to the terminal. And there are thousands of kids all over the rooftops.
Wow.
Screaming, throwing stuffed animals, little toys, you know, and the people are going, oh, they don't know you're coming, huh? Well, we really didn't think they did. So the ramp comes up to hook up to the side of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And these uniformed, I don't know if they were military or police, but they came on and said, human beings. And we're like, oh, my God, what's going to happen to us now? You sit here. Everybody else out. So everybody got off the plane. They took the tunnel away. And we're thinking, well, now what do we do? Are we, like, exported already? And they wheeled the steps up to the side of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to get out to wave to everybody and walk down the steps, you know, like the Beatles.
Well, I was just going to say, like the Beatles coming into New York City. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and they had the national press there. I mean, the whole thing.
Mm.
And we didn't know it, but we were number two in sales in Japan at the time. We were number two under the Beatles for selling records in Japan.
You had another hit there. It was, I believe, was it Turn On Your Heart Light? Is that the name of the other hit that was a big hit in Japan?
Well, it was Turn On Your Love Light.
That's it.
And
I'm thinking of E.T., the heart light. Go ahead, Ting.
Yeah. And then, you know, we did another song called Hold On Baby. It was another Isley Brothers thing. It sounded like Twist and Shout.
Yeah.
Almost exactly. And so, I mean, that was when we got to Japan, they were just trying to break into our rooms.
Wow.
We had security guards at each room, at the stairways, at the elevators. I mean, and they were still, kids were still getting in there, running up and down the hall screaming. It was an experience.
Was there anybody in the band that was single, or were you all coupled up? Does anybody that was not married?
I think by that time we were all married.
You're all married. Okay.
Yeah.
You had to stay away from the groupies.
You know. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, we didn't have enough time to really do anything because it was such a whirlwind of all the things, you know, interviews, radio interviews, press, you know, I mean, it was just...
What kind of venues there, Ting? What were you playing in, like, in stadiums or in concerts, arena halls? What were you playing?
It's a concert hall.
Concert hall.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it was... Like I said, We could have gone back. We could have come back to the States and made a concert tour, you know. And but Dick had informed us that he was quitting before we left, you know, for Japan. He was going to quit before. And I said, you can't do that. We're contracted.
Right.
And so he said, okay, when we're done, I'm done. And he was.
That was it.
The end of it.
Huh.
Yeah.
I know that you had a brief reunion later on. You guys got a chance to play, and how did that go for you?
Now reunion.
Didn't you guys? I thought you had a little got back together there for a short time afterwards.
No, never all the original guys.
Okay.
I tried doing some human beings things, but
right,
it just didn't work out. So, but hey, can I tell you one thing before you?
Yeah, sure, whatever you want.
Okay, well, I'm saying back in the days, because that was when we had the most fun, was Youngstown, you know, and playing in Youngstown. We did a dance at Idora Park with the Pied Pipers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it was, the Who thing was really getting big, okay? So we went out and bought a bunch of trashy, old, junked up instruments and stuff, okay? And we hit them on stage at Idora Park. So at the end of the night, we always did a jam session,
mm-hmm,
with the Pipers. Well, we started doing the jam session, and then we were putting our guitars away, you know, getting out these old things, and we started smashing them, you know, destroying them on stage. Well, the pipers got involved in it, and they were smashing their actual equipment. some of the things we did to those guys.
So what did they say when you guys said, hey, these weren't our real guitars? Were they mad?
No, they didn't care. Right. They were, you know, they said it was a blast. They'd do it again. I was like, right. Well, I ain't breaking up my fine instrument for nobody. I busted up an old piece of junk. But you see, their faces were a little like in shock when they saw we still had our instruments.
That's great.
But we were always doing stuff. All the bands in town, we loved them. We loved all the guys. They were all fun. You know, it was a good time.
When you see, I see something like The Office featured your song at the beginning of one of their seasons where they do a dance through The Office where everybody's involved lip syncing it. And of course, there were hundreds of people that copied that and did it all over the internet. And they're using your song. Are there royalty rights? Do you guys get paid for that when that happens?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just get a check out of nowhere?
You know, not enough for me not to work anymore.
Right. Right.
You know, some beer money.
Yeah, some beer. Okay, you can tell just check just shows up out of nowhere and you say thank you. That's good stuff. All right. Hey, listen, Ting, man, I appreciate our time together. I hope that you are feeling better there. And I appreciate you sharing your days here in Youngstown and with the human beings. It's been really fun reminiscing with you.
Youngstown is the best.
All right. I like it. Yeah, man.
Me too.
Hey, listen, I'd invite you to listen in next week. You can listen online at www.790WPIC. I'll say this to the listener as well, .com, 790WPIC.com. You can listen in next Thursday, Ting, and we'll have Patsy Colombo will be here from Left Dan, and he's going to talk about his days in Youngstown, and he's written a book. So, but I
sounds good.
Yeah, man, I appreciate our time together. Thank you for being on the air with me.
Eric, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yep, have a great night.
You too.
So, Ting Markulin from Human Beings. We didn't really talk about it, but there were be-ins back then. Sit-ins. Do you remember sit-ins and be-ins? That's where the name Laugh-In came from. That was the whole big thing in 67 was an inn. And, of course, there were war protests going on. And so when they were the Human Beings with a G, they did their album. They cut I think it was a 4-song album. I could be wrong about that. But anyways, they cut their album in Cleveland, and it went out in Capitol Records, either purposely left the G off of Human Beings to being Human Beings. And because there were ins going on, sit-ins, you know, all those things. And so somebody, they think, maybe was capitalizing on this. And they said, hey, that's not our name. They said, well, that's fine. If this album doesn't sell anything, we'll change it for the next album. And they said, if it's a hit, however, if there's a hit, you're stuck with it. And, of course, nobody but me hit. And they were stuck with it. So listen in to the, this is Nobody But Me, the original version that the Human Beings redid here. So hang on. Let me see. Should be coming soon. You ready? Listen in. Jump ahead in the song here. So that's the original. That's the original song, Nobody But Me, that the Human Beings covered here.
From the Legacy Financial Strategy Studios online at leavealegacy.com. News Talk 790 WPIC, Sharon Hermitage, Accumulus Station.